Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, December 18th, 2013, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. I'm Mike McKean, sitting in for Amy Simons. Joining me in the Futures Lab studio at RJI for our weekly take on the news media are Missouri School of Journalism Professor Ernest Perry and former general manager of Newsy.com, Jim Flink. On our agenda this week, a look at some very big stories on the national security front and how journalists have framed them. A federal judge says the National Security Agency's sweep of American phone records is probably unconstitutional. While debating that decision, a CNN anchor, their chief legal analyst, and the plaintiff in the case engage in some nasty name-calling. For the third time in a month, the CBS News magazine 60 Minutes draws fire, this time for doing what some say is a puff piece on the NSA. Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor who blew the whistle on the agency's spy tactics, is being labeled 2013's Person of the Year by some in the media. Two news organizations decide that after sitting on a story for 3 years, it's time to expose the CIA's role in the case of a missing American. And we'll also discuss a controversial hidden camera report on school safety by a North Dakota TV station. Well, journalists have shown a light on some highly controversial actions by the U.S. government's intelligence apparatus this year, with, it should be noted, the considerable assistance of NSA leaker Edward Snowden. The latest development came Monday when Federal District Judge Richard Leon ruled the NSA's policy of sweeping up phone company metadata of all Americans amounts to, quote, an indiscriminate and arbitrary violation of our privacy rights under the Fourth Amendment. Judge Leon says the practice is probably unconstitutional, but he's not blocking the program, given the fact that it's almost certainly going to be appealed by the government. Most media say this decision is a big deal. Well, Ernest, is it?
Yes, I think it does have the potential to be a big deal, because what they're saying is that this case is eventually going to make it to the Supreme Court, and it's going to decide whether or not the NSA is going to be able to continue to do this program, which it claims and others in the government claims is one of the ways in which they're protecting us from possible terrorist attacks and other national security kinds of incidents. So it's going to be a big case, but right now it seems to be sort of playing out in the court and playing out in the court of public opinion. And even that public opinion seems to be a small group when you really look at it as a whole.
And, you know, Jim, and we're well down the road from any final decision on this, right. But the media have certainly portrayed it as part of a very large conversation we've been having this year about national security.
Well, and it has to beg the question, will we work through some sort of resolution before the courts actually get to the final resolution? I think it certainly is a warning sign to the NSA, to the government, that this discussion now moves to another realm, and it's no longer in some sort of quiet, hushed courtroom, but now it's going to be discussed even more publicly. And I think the government will now move in concert with that, maybe in advance of that, to try to figure out where the lines get drawn.
And in fact, we should say for our listeners and viewers that we taped the show a little bit earlier in the day on Wednesday, and as we were doing so, the White House was announcing that it planned sometime today to release an independent report on the NSA and what other actions it might decide to take. So perhaps we'll get a chance to talk about that a bit later. Well, an important story, which took a rather bizarre media twist last night, involved the NSA. CNN anchor Don Lemon was fronting a live segment about the lead plaintiff in that NSA phone records lawsuit. His name is Larry Klayman. He's a controversial and conservative lawyer with a long reputation in Washington as a legal gadfly. You can watch the entire segment on our blog if you like, but it went basically like this. Lemon introduced the segment with video of a Klayman adversary questioning the man's intelligence. Lemon asked for a response. Klayman calls Lemon an ultra-leftist. Then CNN legal affairs analyst Jeffrey Toobin, a former Clinton administration lawyer who's had several run-ins with Klayman, called him a lunatic.
It's not about me, Jeffrey, and the fact that you want to try to do a hit on me shows me that you're not a serious person and frankly should not be doing legal commentary for CNN.
Yeah.
I think there are very serious issues here, but the idea that you are the representative of them is really very unfortunate because there are important issues here and they are not obvious in their resolution. But your paranoia and fantasies about the NSA being after you are unworthy of this important case.
There is a bit more name-calling, all the while CNN runs a graphic under the segment that reads, "Who is Larry Klayman? NSA plaintiff also filed birther suit against Obama." Then Lemon tells his producer to take Klayman off the screen while he and Tubin continue their conversation. But in the end, Lemon brings back Klayman.
All right, Jeffrey, and to show you, we're going to be the bigger person, bigger people here. We'll give you the last word, sir. Go ahead.
Last word is you're not the bigger people. Don't kid anybody. Let anybody watch this and see that CNN removes you from the screen when it doesn't like what you think. And you know what? You're not CNN, Don, and Tubin, you're not CNN. CNN is a reputable organization, but you have not acted in a respectful way and, in fact, disgraceful. You're more like Martin Bashir.
Martin Bashir is the liberal talk show host who recently resigned or was fired, you decide, from MSNBC after he used a crude profanity to attack former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Good Lord, guys, what can we say about this rather embarrassing episode?
Well, for a minute there, I thought I was watching Fox News or MSNBC, which is not what you normally see on CNN. And it just appeared to me that there was just this opening salvo on the part of Klayman. And then all of a sudden the anchor gets involved and then Tubin gets involved. And the entire conversation devolves from what they were originally there to talk about, which was the NSA case that was just decided by the judge, to name calling and who had credibility in terms of being able to talk about the story.
First, Jim, Klayman thought it was a setup because they start out with a taped piece criticizing him. They run this thing under him the entire time, questioning his credentials. And so I don't know what CNN expected, but they got something probably different.
Well, no, let's make no mistake. CNN knew what they were going to get when they invited him on the air. It's not like Larry Klayman doesn't have this very long history of run-ins with the media. They knew exactly what they were getting. The fact that he was the plaintiff makes him a legitimate guest, and that's good. But the fact of the matter is that the way they set it up, they set this up the way they set it up. And so I would say maybe not good that they even invited him. They probably should have talked about the larger merits of the case with somebody else. The fact that they did, they got what they probably deserved and thought they were going to get.
They could have at least talked about the merits as well as Klayman's, you know, controversial connection.
What bothers me about this entire segment is that this show is supposed to be an alternative to what you get on Fox and what you get on MSNBC. And in this particular segment, they followed the script of those two networks exactly. And I don't think that they really did a service to the viewers who are turning away from them and turning to CNN to try to get some what they would consider to be credible and straight down the middle type of analysis on a very important issue.
And they completely, by the way, missed the issue because Klayman was engaging in, you know, Don Lemon, you're an ultra leftist and you're, you know, so they completely missed the issue. It was a wasted interview. They could have better spent their time in another way. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that this week a Gallup survey that was conducted earlier in the month was released, and it shows that only 20% of Americans now give TV journalists high marks for ethics and honesty. And really, is it any wonder with performances like this? It's becoming more the norm, frankly, and that's scary.
Yeah, it is very scary because when the public really needs to have news and information, they're going to be wondering, where can we go? Because I can't turn on cable news because I'm not going to get it there. And the networks have cut back so much on the news that they provide, they aren't sure they're going to be able to get it there. So, I mean, where are they going to turn to it? I think a lot of them are turning to the internet. And
yeah, and it's unfortunate that on such a big issue as this, that this is the rhetoric that has overtaken every single news talk show, because now you can't get the important information you need on TV, and it's why TV ratings are starting to plummet.
Well, CNN wasn't the only TV news organization this week to step on a landmine while reporting on national intelligence. On Sunday, 60 Minutes aired a two-part story, Inside the NSA. It began with a description of the very program that Judge Leon would criticize in his ruling the next day. CBS correspondent John Miller asked NSA Director General Keith Alexander to defend it.
So you understand then, there might be a little confusion among Americans who read in the newspaper that the NSA has vacuumed up the records of the telephone calls of every man, woman, and child in the United States for a period of years. That sounds like spying on Americans.
Right, and that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. There's no.
You don't hear the calls.
You don't hear the call.
You don't see the name.
You don't see the names.
You just see this number called that number.
This number, the to from number, the duration of the call, and the date time group. That's all you get. And all we can do is tell the FBI that number is talking to somebody who is very bad. You ought to go look at it.
But privacy advocates argue Americans' phone records should not sit in bulk at the NSA, searchable under a blanket court order. They believe the NSA should have to get a separate court order for each number, and that the record should stay at the phone company.
The second segment of that half-hour report was basically a tour of some parts of the NSA complex in Fort Meade, Maryland. It included interviews with young codebreakers and a claim that the agency once thwarted a Chinese attempt to damage our economy with a cyber attack that could have destroyed, quote, every computer in America. Well, some critics accused Miller of asking softball questions and 60 Minutes of doing another puff piece like the recent report on Amazon.com. Jim, what do you make of the story?
Well, before we get into, yes, it was a puff piece, let's at least defend why 60 Minutes may have approached this story in this way. When you are trying to get somebody on camera that you can't get in any other way, who offers a perspective that you can't get in any other way, sometimes, at least my experience of 20 years of television says, sometimes you cut a deal to say, hey, if you will talk, I'll let you tell your side of the story. That's not where the problem in what 60 Minutes did lies, at least from the way that I look at it. Where the problem lies in is that that's where it seems to have stopped. And there has been plenty of criticism of the NSA that probably doesn't need rehashing, which is what John Miller said is the reason that they didn't go out and right. do that, while he states the other point of view. That having been said, when you don't go and do your due diligence on the other side of the aisle and you show up and you do this kind of interview and that's the sum total of your work, you're going to get bashed for doing a puff piece.
I wonder, though, Ernest, I mean, you know, we talked over the years about whether or not television journalism is more of a process, right, than a sort of an independent record. Does every story have to be a complete and balanced package, or is it okay to go for this new kind of access that otherwise they wouldn't have gotten?
Well, I don't think it has to be a complete and balanced package, but when you take that amount of time on a subject that has gotten widespread coverage, you should have done due diligence. I mean, you basically took almost your entire program looking at the NSA. There were opportunities for them to look at the other side. What is the other side saying? And use that as a counterbalance to what the NSA is doing. And I have no problem with them going and doing a tour and talking about the ways in which the NSA is gathering the information. But you also need to talk about how there are certain segments of the public that feel as if the way in which they're doing that violates the Constitution.
I wonder, Jim, I mean, John Miller, he acknowledged in the piece and also in some extras they put up online that he used to work for the intelligence community. He was probably the only one that they would have allowed to come in and have that kind of access. And we even had Miller sort of being praised when Laura Logan was being, you know, accused of doing that piece on Benghazi. Why didn't you ask him? He had the sources that could have told you that was wrong. But was he the right guy for CBS to put in that spot?
He was the right guy to go in and get that interview. And this could have been some sort of team coverage or something where he presents one point of view and then somebody else goes and gets the other point of view. There could have been different ways to showcase this. And Mike, to the larger point of what you mentioned, between the Amazon.com story, the Laura Logan story, and now this story, that's like three strikes against what is arguably one of the most venerable investigative news magazines that we have historically known. And it begins to really pose the question, has something turned inside of 60 Minutes and CBS that says this is no longer the product that Mike Wallace and Morley Safe and the others were on?
I think it also sort of damages their credibility in the short term and in the long term if this is the kind of news that they're going to be producing. The problem I have with what 60 Minutes has done over the course of these three stories is that there were opportunities to do due diligence and that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. They could have asked more questions. They could have done more reporting. There should not have been a rush to get this out. And part of me wants to doesn't want to think that they're doing this for the ratings, that they're trying to run this during the ratings period and to get viewers in and use sort of the teases that they that 60 Minutes and all shows normally use to get you to watch. And then once they got you watching, they've got the, you know, they've got the eyeballs and they've got the ratings.
I think all of those criticisms are fair. I do think I would give CBS a little bit of credit. If you go to their overtime section on the web, they not only have Miller talking about the conflict and talking about the questions and the access, they show you places where the handlers were, you know, stopping them from recording certain things. And so I think they were trying to be as transparent as they could, despite what arguably might have been a flawed approach to the overall story.
But part of the problem with that, Mike, is that the audience, the demographic for 60 Minutes is probably not going to go to that online content unless they are really pushed to go there.
Well, and it's not just that, but I think that's almost a justification. See, we did our work. And yes, you did some of the work. But now with the collective whole of these three stories, you have to question what is your bar for what is good journalism? And when does the story start and end? And I think what I hear you saying and what I'm saying, Ernest, is I think they fell far short of that.
I think they did. And I think that the next couple of stories, they're going to have to do a much better job.
Well, last week, we discussed Time Magazine's decision to name Pope Francis its Person of the Year. We even joked about the Pope's beating out pop star Miley Cyrus. But Amy did note briefly that some thought the real Person of the Year, in terms of sheer impact anyway, should have been NSA leaker Edward Snowden. So let's talk about that a little bit. I noted, for example, Jim, that The Guardian, which worked directly with Snowden on stories derived from those documents that he stole, named him the Person of the Year based on a survey of their readers. And I just wonder if you would agree with the notion that if we're going to name somebody who had the most impact on the news for the year 2013, it shouldn't be Snowden.
An argument certainly could be made, and I think that this is not just a discussion nationally but internationally about what is the role of government in the post-9/11 era, about how do they protect their citizenry, and what is too far. And it is an evolutionary discussion that probably could not be had without the likes of Bradley Manning and Edward Snowden. And Bradley Manning took it to one level within the military, but Edward Snowden took it to a much larger issue to each one of our households about how much we want to be protected versus how much we want to have our privacy.
I would agree with Jim on this. I think that if you wanted to put Edward Snowden as your Person of the Year to talk about an impact on an issue that is going to continue throughout the next year and several years to come, he would have been the right person. Now, how that would have played in terms of rack sales for Time magazine, right. now you got a different issue there, because trust me, a photo of Pope Francis is going to play very well on rack sales and online, more so than Edward Snowden.
And basically, Glenn Greenwald called Time out for being cowardly, basically for not, you know, making the right step and going with the Pope because it does sell more magazines. I wonder, Jim, to return to your point, I mean, I do think that the news media and politicians of all stripes, people around the world, probably wouldn't be having such a deep conversation about privacy and security without Snowden's actions. But I wonder, that being the case, if public sentiment is starting to change or media coverage of Edward Snowden is starting to change from the guy who stole all the documents to somebody who's helping us have this conversation.
Yeah, and that's why he would not be named Person of the Year, because I think overwhelmingly most Americans who might even see merit in some of the things that he did do not see merit in the character of Edward Snowden, don't believe or trust enough about him to where if you name him Person of the Year, there is some sort of cachet that goes with that, that you did something heroic, groundbreaking, whatever it might be. But he still has that sort of negative perception by the vast majority of people that would never allow him to.
And I think that negative perception comes from the fact that if you're going to do something heroic, if you're going to do something and stand on your conviction, then you need to come back to the country and stand trial of public opinion or trial in the court in order to be able to stand behind that. I mean, fleeing to Russia, of all places, And it puts you in bad light.
And it certainly appears that he's not doing that. In fact, he used the sort of end-of-the-year news stories to keep his plight out in the public. Yesterday, a Sao Paulo newspaper printed an open letter to the Brazilian people, along with a request that the Brazilian government grant him asylum so that he can get out from under his exile in Moscow. We'll see what happens with that. Well, the Associated Press and the Washington Post raised another interesting ethical debate last week with their jointly released story that an American who disappeared while in Iran 6 years ago was indeed working for the CIA, despite years of U.S. government denials. According to the reports, Robert Levinson was employed by some rogue officials within the CIA to learn more about Iran's nuclear program. The last word that Levinson might be alive came 3 years ago in a video of him asking for help and confessing to crimes against the Iranian people. Three veteran CIA analysts were fired after that mission blew up, but the Obama administration insisted that Levinson was a businessman, not a spy. Well, several journalists, including those from the AP and the Washington Post, knew the truth as early as 3 years ago, but they withheld the story because they said they worried that it might jeopardize Levinson's safety. The White House, ironically, used that same justification in criticizing the news organizations that published the truth. So clearly, publishing that story wasn't a slam dunk call ethically. Did they make the right decision in the end?
Finally, I think they did arrive at it. Look, I think there are right ways and wrong ways to approach protecting sources, to protecting potential victims of crime, whatever that crime might be. And I think that these journalists did their due diligence. They did sit on a story, which, you know, technically you would say that's not necessarily a good thing. But in this case, I think it was a good thing. At some point, however, you keep revisiting that decision and you say at some point that argument no longer holds merit. It no longer carries the weight it once did, whatever it might be, and you move on.
I mean, for news organizations to basically sit on a story for years and not run with it is very unusual. And I think they did due diligence not only in doing the reporting on the story, but also in trying to uncover leads as to where he was and who may have taken him as a way in which to get the story out. And once it got to the point where everything was exhausted, they really didn't have much of a choice but to run the story.
And could we also say that I think that there was a healthy amount of doubt throughout this by anyone who was looking at this with a jaundiced eye to say, why did he really disappear? Why is he still not home?
The AP reporter, Matt Apuzzo, who worked on this piece, said that keeping that story secret was the hardest thing that he ever did. And he wasn't at least buying the White House line. In fact, it didn't sound like the family was either. He said, I'd like to see the government talk a little bit less about the AP and a little bit more about Bob Levinson. So I think we might all agree with that.
Yeah.
We have another item involving the media and security, but it's not national security. This story comes to us from Fargo, North Dakota, where TV reporter Melanie Moore used a hidden camera to investigate the safety of local elementary schools on the one-year anniversary of the Newtown shootings.
I visited three schools today, the first an elementary school in West Fargo. I walked in, walked right past the office, and down a hallway. I saw classrooms and students waiting in line for the cafeteria. I walked right by faculty and staff without any questions before showing myself out. The second school I visited was in Fargo. I expected to be intercepted by security, but again, I walked right in. Right away, I saw lines of students, and one can't even imagine what could happen.
The two school districts involved said they were reviewing procedures and experimenting with other ways to keep their schools safer, but they also asked local police to investigate the station for violating city and state trespassing laws, and the Fargo superintendent also questioned the accuracy of the story, saying the reporter only stayed in the buildings a brief time and was in fact intercepted in one of them by a teacher who directed her to the office so that she could sign in. Well, first of all, is this a story that should be told with a hidden camera?
It is a same-day turn, the result of someone else's reporting that a news director or news management thought up and said, you know what? What would happen if? And they did it. So the hidden camera gives it that sort of sexy appeal that will draw people in and watch the 6 or 10 o'clock news. And to do it any other way, first of all, they're going to get kicked out. So that would be point one. Point two is, I don't think it's really great journalism. I mean, I think there are other things that you need to ask, like, do we really want to have a police state where we have people who every time time we try to go to our elementary school are, you know, frisking us, you know, those kinds of questions. But it does. I do think that the reporter and the way that that reporter got the information does beg the question, why are the authorities coming after the reporter now?
Yeah, that's the issue I have, is the fact that they're going after the reporter. Yes, I'm with you that this is not great journalism. If the reporter had went in with the hidden camera and then went to the school district and said, here's what I was able to do, and talk about that story in a more open fashion in terms of what are the steps you're going to be taking, talk to law enforcement, talk to the school district, and make it a fuller story, then that would have been better journalism. But for the school district to ask law enforcement to go after the reporter, I have problems with that. What they should have done was to ask the school district. The school district should ask law enforcement come in and help us figure out how to do this.
I agree with you that it's going too far to have law enforcement, you know, look into trespassing charges. I do think that it's fair game. Maybe we wouldn't agree on the answer, but it's fair game for the district to say, well, you're showcasing at the time that, you know, that there are problems, but you're giving open ideas to people who might come in and take advantage of this while we are trying to address the security issues. And oh, by the way, what really happened? She came in there for arguably maybe 90 seconds in each building. She was at least approached by somebody. You could interpret what happened in ways other than, oh my gosh, the schools aren't paying any attention to security.
Well, and the line that she said that plays right into that, Mike, is the one can only imagine what would happen, because that is the kind of fear-mongering sort of reporting that people kind of get a little bit tired of. Because the fact of the matter is that in most elementary schools across America, nothing will happen. That being said, it is a discussion that that community should have, and it's a valuable discussion when you can say, see, this is what happened, this is what I did. I don't like everything about how they did it. I may take issue with the fact that they did it, but the fact of the matter is the discussion should go to safety.
Right. There was some context that wasn't there. I mean, you didn't really go and talk to school officials. You didn't talk to law enforcement. All you did was went in with your hidden camera and showed this, used some questionable language in terms of what could have happened and that sort of thing. And it does provide, number one, as you said, Mike, an example of what somebody can do. And then number two, it's fear-mongering, because the parents will look at that and go, wait a minute, my kid goes to that school. And then they're up there and they're up in arms. So, I mean, it's not the best way to talk about a very serious issue.
I'm not trying to offer them advice. I'm not sure you could redeem this story. But I do wonder, Jim, what kind of reaction they would have gotten had they sent a middle-aged male or even a 20-something young man into this school without any credentials. Because, frankly, sending in a pretty innocent-looking 20-something mm-hmm. blonde female, you know, those are not the people who shoot up schools,
right?
And no question about it. And then dress a person in a certain way, and now all of a sudden it does throw up flags. That having been said, again, I think, you know, this was a same-day turn. It's some of the bad things about what happens in local television is you send out a reporter to do something like this. I don't fault the reporter. It may come back on her.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it for this week. I want to thank Ernest and Jim for their analysis. I also want to thank our technical team. RJI's Travis McMillan is our director. KBIA's Pat Akers runs audio. And thanks to you for listening and watching. You can see extended clips of the video we used today, as well as links to related stories on our blog. It's under the Talk Shows tab at kbia.org. We welcome your comments on the blog, or you can use email if you prefer. Our address is views@kbia.org. I'm Mike McKean. We're going to be off on Christmas Day and on New Year's Day, so please join Amy, Ernest, and me again on January 8th for our next edition of KBIA's Views of the News.